Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr. Albert Breer is here. And, a Cowboys Super Bowl in Las Vegas has a nice ring to it, Albert. I don't know. How are you feeling about this?
I think Jerry runs that's one of the stadiums Jerry runs concessions at. So, and I think Vegas is his kind of place, you know, in a lot of different ways. So, seeing them back in the Super Bowl in Vegas would be exciting. And I don't know, man. Like, I just watching them yesterday, it's just so things seem to happen in a hurry with them, where they get on top of you and it's like impossible to get out. You know, like they just suffocate you. And, I just think like the ability to hold on to Dan Quinn for the last 3 years and have a player like Micah Parsons that he's weaponizing, they've just got like this really unique thing defensively where they don't even need to be great offensively. And I think that's taken a lot of the weight off of Dak Prescott's shoulders. I think he's playing pretty good now. It's a good mix there. I think maybe we all underestimated them a little bit. I'd say like the craziest thing is I'd say through 2 weeks, they're clearly the best team in the NFC East. And I don't think anybody would have said that. We would be saying that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so we got a lot to get to today. I want to talk about the Falcons. I want to talk about the Chargers. I want to talk about Justin Fields, because I promised everybody I was not going to make any indictment on Fields until at least week 3. So we're not freaking out yet, but we got to talk about Justin Fields. We got to talk about Joe Burrow. That's another guy that I think we're all sort of waiting and holding on to this idea of, okay, is this going to get better? Is it going to get worse? But I want to start in Dallas because, okay, there are a lot of 2-0 teams in the NFL right now, and I think a lot of that is schedule dependent. Like, you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are a nice story, wrote about them yesterday on Sunday, but they're very schedule dependent, right? You had a really bad Vikings team to start the season, then you get the Bears, and so voila, here you start 2-0. And the Cowboys to some degree are like that, right? They got the Giants in a monsoon, which was the perfect game for them, and then they get the Jets coming off of losing Aaron Rodgers. I don't know a team that's going to come into Dallas and win a game against a team like that, but it is the manner in which they are winning these games. And you alluded to it, Albert. The last 2 weeks, there have been plays where Micah Parsons has gotten into the backfield, and the speed and the violence with which he's doing it, it looks like they're playing a different game. And, you know, we can say that a lot. That's an NFL platitude, but I don't think that's true. Like, Micah Parsons is just a level above everybody else in the NFL right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's so unique too, and that's the thing. Like, they showed that graphic during the game about, like, he's playing this many snaps off the ball on the right, this many snaps off the ball on the left, this many snaps on the left edge, this many snaps on the right edge. And I don't think people fully understand how difficult it is to pull that off and to be equally good on the line as you are off the line, and how those are two completely different positions with completely different responsibilities, with completely different physical demands. And, you know, I remember talking to Mike Vrabel about this when he was playing. And, you know, when Teddy Bruschi had his stroke in 2005, Mike was forced to move from outside linebacker to inside linebacker, which is essentially what Micah Parsons is doing almost on a down-in, down-out basis, right? And Vrabel played pretty well at inside linebacker. He was able to, like, stabilize them inside. I remember having a conversation with him where he was like, I freaking hate this. Like, he couldn't stand playing inside linebacker. Like, and he really, and what it was it was like the physical toll he was taking maybe wasn't worse, but it was completely different than what he was used to playing at the end of the line, you know? And it was such a huge adjustment. And, you know, I remember Mike saying, he's like, just because people see linebacker next to it, they think it's the same thing. It is not the same thing. They're two totally different positions. And what Micah Parsons is doing is he's essentially playing linebacker and defensive end. And I know because he doesn't have his hand on the ground, people don't think about him as playing defensive end, but he's playing defensive end, you know, most of the game. And then he's also like one of the best linebackers in football. To be that good at two positions simultaneously is mind-blowing. And, you know, I can tell you, like, Dan Quinn has sort of changed his defense, which was well-worn, you know, in a system that's been successful over the years to accommodate Parsons because he is that good. And I don't know. There was one play where he looped around, and I tweeted it, but I'm sure you know which play I'm talking about, where he looped, he came off the offensive left, the defensive right edge, and looped around back to the middle and kind of shot the A-gap.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear to God, Connor, if I was the quarterback and I saw that, I would be so terrified. Like, how fast he got on Zach Wilson. Like, it was like you couldn't blink and he was on top of him, you know? And so just to have the threat of that on every down, not knowing where he's going to line up, if like, what does that do to your protection? What does that do to your offensive line? And then you build around that with other really good pros like DeMarcus Lawrence and, you know, and Trayvon Diggs and, you know, Malik Hooker playing really well now. And it's just, you know, like, you see the overall speed of the defense, the way they've built, like, for Dan Quinn's position specifics. And then to inject this sort of, like, weapon, because I think that's all you can call them, right? You don't typically call defensive players weapons. To inject this sort of weapon into it, it's been something to see.
Yeah, I you know, and we all saw it to some degree last year, but mm-hmm. I think as he grows within this system, the only issue that I could imagine arising is that you would want to give him a rest at some mm-hmm. point, almost to the point where, you know, if I'm Dallas, I say to him, okay, if we got the division locked up by November, you know, maybe Thanksgiving, and again, I'm getting way ahead of myself, but let's say we get the division locked up here by Thanksgiving, like, I want you to, you know, I'm throwing out some air quotes here, I want you to get some turf toe. And we'll see in the playoffs, because the pace at which he plays is so frenetic, and he is so active off the ball. And I don't care how much sustainable energy you have as a human being. Like, at some point, that's the only thing that slows this team down. And offensively, I think what we had heard during the preseason was that this was going to be a lot more simple, quick reads. Kellen Moore likes to throw the ball all over the yard. Dak Prescott was always better when he was efficient. He was utilizing the play action. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this team, they're built, man. I mean, we had the Bengals Super Bowl here, but Bengals 49ers Super Bowls, I think the two of us. But I'm regretting that a little bit.
I don't know. The Niners are pretty damn good, too.
I want them to meet again in the playoffs so bad.
Like an old school 90s NFC championship game?
Yes.
Like the old Summerall Madden. You have the cool, like, box open and everything else. And yeah.
We are technologically advanced enough as a society to have them call that game via like artificial intelligence at this point, yeah. Right? We could.
I think
do it.
So. Yeah, I think we could definitely like we could ship them in from beyond to call that game.
Have you heard that there's like a scientist that gave an interview on some morning show or whatever it was, and he was basically saying start recording. Tape recording all of your loved ones now, and within like 3 years, we'll be able to make them live in perpetuity via like ChatGPT and AI. And so
yeah, it's like I don't
scary,
know.
Yeah, a little scary.
Yeah, a little bit like when you see like those. I don't know. What is it like that Cambridge Robotics company or whatever that has
the
like
robot
the,
dog?
Yeah, like yeah. It's like I don't want that dog to be that smart. Like
no, I hate that dog. I hate that dog.
Yeah. I mean, like, because I don't know, like when you're not filming that dog, what is that dog doing? Is that dog
learning
and making plans?
It's reading books. It's listening to the yeah. MMQB podcast. It's learning to break down film. Eventually, we will be replaced by the Cambridge dog. There's a robot Jerry Jones. Have you seen this?
Is that? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was. So that Jerry Jones actually explained that the reason that the real Jerry Jones sold the naming rights to his stadium to AT&T was because of Alexander Graham Bell.
What?
I'm not even kidding. I couldn't make that up, right?
Like he's just a big fan of A. Graham Bell?
Yeah. Just a big fan of the work of Alexander Graham Bell. Yeah. So it wasn't for the money, folks. It was because Jerry Jones is a longtime admirer of Alexander Graham Bell and what he's meant to America. And so he wanted to put his company on the most American of places, Jerry World in Arlington, Texas.
That's like, I'm rooting for the U.S. in the World Cup because I'm a big fan of George Washington. You know,
yeah,
like I really like that guy, George Washington.
Read up on Abraham Lincoln, and now I'm all in.
On the flip side, we have the Jets, and I did listen to some New York talk radio this morning while I was
doing
the daycare drop-off, and, you know, here's the deal. I don't know. Okay, so there's Zach Wilson mistakes, and we're going to put them in a bucket over here, and I'm mm-hmm. holding up my right hand. And then there's what are you going to do in that situation anyway, no matter who is the quarterback? And I'm
right.
going to put them up in my left hand here. I think we saw both of those. The play that you're talking about where Zach Wilson is hit before he even picks his eyes up to look downfield is one of those.
Yeah.
And we don't have an option. The flip side of that is when he throws that pick to Garrett Wilson deep down the left side, you have a safety in the middle and you have two deep routes and seasoned quarterback is going to look that guy off. He's going to make him think he's going in one direction and then throw it in the other. And it was a nice throw. Zach has arm talent, but he's not doing those little granular things that are going to win him the down-to-down basis. It was a great throw to Garrett Wilson on the touchdown. But other than that, we're not seeing those consistent you know, kind of next level moves from him.
Yeah, I actually have a theory on this that, and my mind has changed a little bit in that, like, last week I made the argument that the context of Zach Wilson entering the lineup is so much different than the last couple of years. Because the last couple of years, they're trying to have him be their franchise quarterback. They're trying to figure out if he can be their franchise quarterback. That first year, they didn't have a great team around him. This year, they built a team that I think doesn't require the quarterback to be off the charts good. So, like, you have, like, potentially a really good run game if you can get the tackle position sorted out with Breece Hall and Dalvin Cook. And you have potentially a really great defense. And I made the argument, like, okay, well, the Jets are just going to have to just ask Zach Wilson to put his hands at 10-2 and keep the car on the road. And, you know, my buddy Phil Perry, who I work with up here at NBC, made a great point to me. He said, that's never been who Zach Wilson is.
Yep.
And I hadn't thought of it that way, as if, and I feel stupid because it's like, as if that in itself isn't a skill, because it is. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, that is a skill. Like, that's not just something anybody can do. And so, like, it does make me wonder, watching the game yesterday, it sort of bolstered this thought. Like, the biggest criticism of him coming out at BYU was not that, like, well, how high is the ceiling? You know, what is he capable of? It was the captain thing, but it was also, Well, if you actually watch the tape, you can see like all these open guys underneath, and he's holding the ball, and then going way downfield. And he can do that because he's got better players than the other team 9 times out of 10 when he's out there with BYU based on the schedule they played. But is that really going to translate to the pros? And the pushback you always got is like, well, you know, we think that once we get Zach Wilson in, we're going to be able to teach him to be more of a game manager and learn some of those skills. And they didn't come the first 2 years. So it does make me wonder a little bit here, Connor, like, is what the Jets need right now not what Zach Wilson is?
What the Jets need right now is Baker Mayfield, right? Todd Bowles said the same thing. He used another car analogy. He said, we don't need Baker to boil the engine. We need him to drive the car. Right. And he's driving the car. But again, that's a short-term thing. We'll get to the Vikings in a little bit. But I agree. I mean, if I were the Jets, I probably would have, if you go back in time and you get an opportunity to make the same decision all over again, I probably would have done it. Because if you look at Zach Wilson, like, the comp to Aaron Rodgers was there, and you're building an outside zone offense, you're bringing it all in. Out of all the quarterbacks in that draft, he probably best profiled to fit that guy. I think the problem was the amount of time he had made him, like you said, pass off the intermediate options and not really have a total concept of how quickly things move in the pocket. And again, we talked about the two buckets, right? Some of those plays were evident on Sunday against Dallas. Some of those plays, he had no shot. And so it's going to be worth watching him against like a mid-level opponent to gauge growth, because I do think when he came in for Aaron Rodgers against the Bills, there were some good plays. And he did it too against Dallas this week, where he's just escaping the pocket, he's throwing his shoulder down. Now, does he need to be total hero ball in those situations? No, he needs to protect himself a little bit better, but he's moving the ball, he's picking up first downs. But there's a long way to go here. And you know,
here's the other thing though, Connor. You say a long way to go. How much runway is the locker room going to give him?
Right. I mean, they pulled the ripcord on him last year, and they started wearing Mike White t-shirts.
Right.
You know?
Right. And you just sort of wonder, like, is he in this position where it's almost like, and you talk about getting fresh starts, and that becomes so cliche, but I think that's part of it, right? Is like that if you have history in a place, whether it's good or bad, you have that history. And whether you like it or not, like, eventually there's going to come a point where you're either going to change that history or that history is going to be there with you. And I look at what happened on Sunday, and look, it's Dallas's defense. So who knows? He might wind up looking a lot better against the Patriots. I don't know. But Dallas's defense probably brought back a lot of old memories for guys in that locker room on where things went wrong last year when that team was trending towards being a playoff team, and then the wheels came off completely.
Yeah.
And then you see some of the stuff on, and I don't know, man, like, you see some of the stuff that happened last night on social media, and I don't know what to think. You know, I don't know what to think when you see Breece Hall and Sauce Gardner doing those things, because I do think...
Wait, what did they do? I missed this. I shut down Twitter at like 9 p.m.
Okay. So Breece Hall only had 4 touches. He tweeted out 4 footballs and then deleted it. And then Sauce Gardner said something. You'd have to Google this one. I'm everything's kind of rattled around in my brain right now. But he did something, and then somebody caught him doing it, and he deleted his Twitter account.
Just deleted the whole account.
Yeah, or deactivated it, or whatever you do.
Damn, y'all really love saying my name on this app. LOL, CeeDee Lamb didn't catch a ball on me today.
Oh, source, that's what it was. Me. Yeah. So somebody posted CeeDee Lamb stats as if like the numbers were like exclusively against Sauce Gardner. And then he sort of absolved himself of responsibility for CeeDee Lamb's day and then deleted his Twitter account.
Boy, I'll tell you what. Thank God we did not have any sort of social media after like high school football games.
It would have been so bad.
How bad would that be? And let me just ask you this, because this thought just popped into my head. Like, think about Texas high school football. Think about Ohio high school football, Florida high school football. Real deal. Obviously, Pennsylvania, the mecca of American high school football.
Yeah.
What if you got to know those kids on a level where, you know, you were familiar with their social media and you just made a cottage industry out of doing shit posts on their tweets after high school football games? Wouldn't that be amazing? It would be like the source material for that is just it's unending. I just gave someone a $1 trillion idea.
I cannot imagine like what a high school football player in Texas probably has to deal with.
Like what that guy, you know, that guy just fires up Twitter after a game or X. He just fires up Meta and he just decides to start trashing like you know, his offensive lineman or, you know, some kid from another school. Man, that would be awesome. Although they're all trying to get recruited, right?
Right.
I do think in the NFL there probably is some degree of freedom where, you know, Sauce Gardner's not going anywhere. He's going to make $100 million at some point in his life if he hasn't already. And so good for him, you know. Don't delete it, though. Just keep it up.
But, like, I don't know. I try not to read too much into this stuff. But it's just how quickly it happened. It took like one game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it just makes you wonder if everyone in that building is maybe feeling the weight of everything that they carried for the last 6 months, like crashing down on them after Rodgers got hurt. You know, because I think the expectations were so high, and if there is like a period of mourning that maybe extended to the game yesterday over what they've lost, and that's probably the wrong word, but it wouldn't surprise me based on how much like so many people had tied up in the season.
Yeah.
And then you see what happens, you know, when you take him out of the equation and it didn't look great. I think the Jets need to at least play well against the Patriots this week. I think it's really important that they at least play well. Maybe they don't win the game, but they at least need to play well.
Speaking
being
of which,
that game to the land.
Let's go there next because my Albert, my AFC champion, potential AFC champion, New England Patriots are in a little bit of trouble. And
you didn't pick them to win the conference; you just picked them to win the division, right?
I picked them to win the division, and it's looking tough right now. Here's the thing: I picked every game. And when you pick every game, you don't have
that. By the way, is the ultimate thankless job. Just to give Connor his due for that. That is the ultimate thankless job.
No. The ultimate thankless job is editor Mitch, who has to check and make sure that even if I had 272 and 272, that I didn't give two teams a win in the same week. And he caught like four of those. And so then he does the tiebreakers for the playoffs. Like, that is absolute administrative hell, and I can't believe he
does it.
Oh, the tiebreakers I hit him with were miserable this year. Like, he had to go to, like, the third criterion for each one, and he likes that stuff, but not enough. No one gets paid enough to do that. No one gets paid enough to double-check my game-by-game predictions. But when you're doing it, you're going through and you're looking at every game as an individual entity, and you're not considering the scope of the season. And so I had the Patriots, I think, going 7-1 in the division. Mm-hmm. But what happened was I had them and the Bills both winning the last game. And then the way that I wanted to have it turn out, I had to have the Patriots win that game, or else we would have had to go all the way back to the beginning and start it. And so I had them going undefeated in the division, which was the worst part of it. And it's
this
not
is probably what it's like to be a schedule maker.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like you think you've got it, and then one thing is wrong, and the whole Jenga tower falls.
Yeah. Luckily for us, we had magazine deadlines, so we just had to start shepherding that puppy through. But when I went in the radio, all the Patriots people were like, "We're not just amazed that you had them winning the division; we're amazed that you had them go undefeated in the AFC East." And so that part of it is already
that ship sailed.
That's a little disappointing. Here's what I'll say, though. I mean, every week they're looking all right, and they're in games.
They look competent. Yeah.
They look competent. It's just, you know, they're my biggest fear in picking them, right, was I picked them because they're a high floor team, is that they lack the ceiling, right? They lack that eventual game-breaking move that doesn't have anything to do with an awesome field goal block, which, by the way, was the coolest thing I've seen in the NFL this year.
That was unbelievable. It looked like he came out of he came from Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I think what you're getting at, though, has sort of always been the Patriots program is, you know, and I hate to give people a history lesson here, but when Robert Kraft fired Bill Parcells, it was because Parcells wanted to be all in for the time he was there. And what Kraft wanted was to build like a 49ers style consistent winner, the 49ers being the model back then. And, you know, like, so what Belichick sort of sold Kraft on when he was hired in 2000 was, I can build a team that's going to be competitive year in and year out. And at the very least, you're going to be able to put a good product on the field annually. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, if you look at the way they built their roster with a strong middle class, with fiscal responsibility, with all of these different things, the games they play with draft picks and how they manage their assets and building up margin for error and how they spend and how they accumulate draft picks, it's all built to be like 9-8, 10-7. You know what I mean? And then for 20 years, they had a quarterback who put them over the top, right? And was able to take a team that maybe was like a 9-win team, a 10-win team on a regular basis up to the 12 or 13-win stratosphere. And then they were able to augment that with players who just wanted to play with that quarterback, right? So now you had this model of a team that could be kind of level year in and year out. You had the quarterback who put it over the top. And then that quarterback was able to attract all of these other players, your Randy Mosses, your Darrell Revises, all these other guys. If you do all that and you draft well, then you're going to have a really good product for 20 years, which they did. And I think that's sort of where we're at with the Patriots now, is it does feel like so much of what's going on there is they're still operating like Brady's there. And what's left when Brady is taken out of that equation, I think, is a team that's very level, that's very competent, that's very competitive week to week, but maybe isn't good enough when you get these high leverage situations against the best teams in the league.
I hate how someone said a new low, the Patriots haven't started 0-2. And it's just like, we're done. Like the Patriots haven't started 0-2 since 2001. Okay. Yeah. But the Patriots, this is a different thing now.
Yeah, do you know who came into the lineup in the second game of that 0-2 start?
Yeah. This is a different
thing. That legitimately, I love that stat because no one mentioned that it legitimately coincides with Tom Brady trotting off the bench in the second game.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like they had Cleo Lemon, you know, in the middle of this stretch or Quincy Carter. You know, this was one quarterback and then Jimmy Garoppolo for a little bit and then Jacoby Brissett for even a little less than that. And yeah, okay.
I mean, the last 4 years have done so much to burnish Tom Brady's legacy. if you look at every level of it, you know what I mean? What's happened to the Patriots, what happened to the Buccaneers, the different players he's playing. I would argue the Bucs almost look, the Bucs look pretty good coming out of Brady too, right? So I think that the Patriots, I felt like coming into the year, they were middle of the AFC team, where if a couple things broke right, they could make the playoffs. And even with a couple losses, I haven't moved off that spot.
I haven't either. I still feel good about where they're at. I think that Miami sucks to play at the beginning of the season. They are awful to play at the beginning of the season.
Offense is so much fun to watch. Second year of Mike McDaniel, it is so much fun to watch.
It's so much fun to watch, and it's at full speed right now, right? Yeah. And so, you know, we've talked about this. They do wear down at the end of the season, and when you want them is in December. And right now, they're just, Vic Fangio's dialed in, McDaniel's dialed in, Tyreek Hill hasn't been tired of all the kind of the linear sprinting that he has to do. It's a bad team to face right now, and they're going to boat race a lot of people over the first 6 or 7 weeks of this season. But, and defensively, I think that's true too. But seeing the way that Mac handled some of the pressure And again, I'm not trying to bolster my pick of the Patriots winning the AFC East, but I, you know, he looks like he has answers this year, whereas last year it was very helpless. Like, it was alarmingly helpless. I know
we're going to get to this later in the show, but like, I came into the season saying, like, if I had a gun to my head, I would probably take Justin Fields second among the 2021 quarterbacks behind Trevor Lawrence. I think Lawrence is far and away still, like, just way, way far and away number one. I would flip that now. I would take Mac Jones over Justin Fields just because I see the way that he's operating right now. So I still think like, Mac's ceiling is a question, but you're right. Like, they've given him an offense that gives him answers. You can see he's playing faster. He's got confidence out there. There are still throws he can't make. There's still something that's going to be left to be desired watching him play. And part of the problem is where he plays, the bar is so impossibly high because of the guy who came before him that it's going to be tough for him to chase that standard. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, watching the first two games, like, it just sort of – and my comp for him coming out, like, that I heard that I really liked was Chad Pennington. Other people made the Kirk Cousins comparison. I kind of like the Kirk comparison. You can see a lot of Kirk in his game.
You can, but I love Chad Pennington. So I'm
you
okay
like that
with
one?
That. Yeah, that was a good one. I've never heard that one before. Mm-hmm. Hopefully pre-rotator cuff tear Chad Pennington.
I would say that's safe to say.
If they compared
I'm not comparing him to arm dangling off my office body, Chad Pennington.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There's a lot happening these days. But I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters, without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go from one quarterback who looks to be developing some answers and is 0-2 to another quarterback who is 0-2 and doesn't seem to be developing a whole lot of answers, and that's Russell Wilson. The Washington Commanders, 35-33.
Frisky.
They're 2-0. Yeah. What's that?
Frisky Washington Commanders.
The Frisky. Yeah, I mean, listen, this is a week for Bucks fans, and this is a week for Commanders fans. It gets a lot harder after this. Enjoy it right now. Eric Bieniemy, take your victory lap. Run around. This is a good time to be you. But this was I have to give them so much credit. I mean, the Broncos came out and so, okay, their scripted drives were really well, went really well. You saw Russell Wilson do what he has almost outright refused to do, which is be a active part of the offense as a runner, as a dual threat quarterback. And when he does that, the offense moves forward. Mm-hmm. And so he was doing that on the opening drive. And then that set up later on, you know, we saw the Russell Wilson moon ball. We saw the deep shot to Mims and the touchdown. And so everybody, I'm sure, at Mile High is like, okay, good, we're back. This is happening now. But what happens is in the second half, he sort of just becomes this new version of himself again. He starts throwing the ball into people's hands, throwing some bad picks, especially on those kind of sideline throws where he's just late and he's getting red. And all of a sudden, it looks like last year's Russell Wilson again. And I don't know if there's some bad habits that developed there that he's got to break, or if he's not athletic enough to play the way that he did in Seattle as he did now. And that's not a slight against Russell, but, you know, we've all turned 35 in our lives. We know things change. And, you know, I think that might be just part of the equation to him. But this team got absolutely outgritted by the Commanders starting at the end of the second half or at the end of the first half and then continuing on through the rest of that game. And I think that one's going to sting with them for a while.
Yeah. You wonder if like, this is the one we're going to look at and say, if Jared Stidham is starting in week 8, this is where it happened, you know, where it was Sean Payton realized like there's only so far he can go with Russell Wilson. And like eventually the amount of answers Sean Payton's going to have for this situation, I think, are going to run out, because it's just like there's what Russell Wilson wanted to be, which we saw didn't work last year. There's what he was in Seattle, which worked, but I don't know that he's the same athlete he was back then. And I think you're sort of stuck in the middle now where like he's just not like, if you're going to make it work, you got to play him like he did in Seattle. But it's really much harder to do that now, because are you going to get the willing runners consistently? And is he as good an athlete as he was back then? And if you script it up, it looks okay. But then once the opponent catches up to what you're doing, are you stuck? And I do think like Sean Payton, when he took the job there, viewed it as sort of a long build. I know he said the stuff that he did to Jarrett Bell about making the playoffs and everything else, but I think he did view this as I'm going to have to take some time to clean some stuff out, which I think explains why he ran training camp the way that he did, like kind of like a ground up type of approach. Like he didn't feel like he was walking into a ready-made situation, and that there was a lot of building that had to take place. And so I do think that this is the year where you're going to see some experimentation from him. And it wouldn't surprise me now at 0-2 if like you start to see Sean messing with some things and trying some things, and some of them might relate to, hey, I got to figure out whether or not there's any future with Russell Wilson. And the trouble that the Broncos are going to have is that contract is going to make it really, really difficult and make it hurt to get out whenever you want to get out over the next couple of years, unless you wait 3 or 4 years to do it. But if you feel like you need to detach, you might feel like you need to detach. And the chance to do it after this year, while it might hurt, might be better than waiting too long to do that.
Right, because there's going to be a lingering sort of frustration with everybody that, like, why does he just get to come in here and make $50 million while the rest of us are kind of, you know, working our tails off and trying to figure this thing out? And I'm not saying that Russell's not working his tail off. It's just...
That's never been the problem, right? Yeah.
It's never been the problem, right? It's just... we don't know how to do that anymore. And the entire NFL has changed over the course of when Russell was last a really potent player. And now we're a completely different defensive league, right? Everybody's kind of following Vic Fangio's lead. And I do think that there's going to, you know, there's a couple of kind of core evolutions off of that. And it prioritizes your front four in a vicious pass rush where it necessarily didn't before. You know, teams were more worried about different things, even though you always want a great lifeblood pass rusher. Now everybody's got like two, and everybody has got ways to simulate pressure, ways to get into the backfield. And so what Wilson did, you would need to be even more athletic than he was at the height of his career, I think, to operate that way. And so now we're seeing this, but little bit of a gut punch for the Broncos.
I also would say this before we move off this game. I think Sam Howell is better than people realize.
You were on it. I was just about to give you credit for this. You were the one. My buddy Tyler Dunn was the only person on Team Buccaneers, and you, I think, were the charter member of the Sam Howell Hive. So,
I just thought, like, I mean, like, you know, like, you're always going to pop up your starting quarterback. But I just think a lot of the things that happened with Sam Howell over his last year in college and then his first year as a pro, you could draw this like logical straight line where it was like, okay, so he was great as a sophomore and a lot of people thought he was going to be a first round pick. Then he loses like two NFL receivers. One of them is actually on the Commanders in Dyami Brown. He loses two NFL running backs in Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. His offensive line's a tire fire. And Mac Brown basically makes the decision, we need to make you a part of the running game to the point where he was running the ball 15 times a game his last year there. What'd you think was going to happen?
Right.
You know, like, and a couple of people made this point to me, and I think it's a good one. It's, well, if they're turning you into, like, you know, Scott Frost circa 1997.
Wow.
Like, do you think, like, is Tommy Frazier a better one? I don't know. Like, Scott Frost, I mean, if you're turning him into that, right, then what do you think you're going to get as a passer? And so, I think you get that, right? So, but if you want to look at it the other way, you can say he really took one for the team there. And he didn't bitch and moan. He took one for the team there. Then he declares and he goes to Washington. And, like, the feedback they were getting from defensive players about the way he looked in practice, he's throwing with anticipation. He's throwing receivers open. Like, he has real juice on the ball when it's coming at us. Like, that's where a lot of, the belief in Sam Howell came from, was on the practice field. So, like, I just think that there's a logical way you can look at it where it's like, do I think Sam Howell's going to be Josh Allen? No. Do I think he could be, to borrow year one, Baker Mayfield? I think he could probably be Baker Mayfield. Like, I don't think you have to stretch too much to get there, right? And we're talking about getting using a fifth round pick now and comparing him to a guy who maybe wasn't worthy of going first overall in the final analysis, but did go first overall.
Man, I'm looking at Scott Frost highlights right now.
He was amazing back in the day.
He could sling it too, man. I mean, what's going on over there? We should get me a couple of Scott Frosts and we'll put together a football team.
I believe he was a safety on the final Bill Parcells team in New York with the Jets.
Really?
The 99 Jets, who've been referenced a lot lately, right? Because of the Vinny Testaverde Achilles injury being compared to Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, Scott Frost was a safety on that team.
That's so sick. We need more. We need more of that. So yeah, I mean, where are we at right now with Denver? I think one more loss puts them certainly out of playoff contention, as Sean Payton thought. And you get the Dolphins next week at Miami, which is not going to be a fun experience for them. And I just don't think athletically they can handle the Dolphins. Defensively, I don't think they can handle the Dolphins. That's going to be a tough change in scenery. You're going to go down there. It's going to be hot as hell in Miami. Try to play and win there. So at 0-3, you know, if you're Peyton, do you eventually have to come out here and swallow a can of worms and say, yeah, what I said was dumb? And I guess to some degree he has said that. But, like, you know, I do think he's going to have to he gets the boomerang end of this now where it comes back around and it hits him in the face again.
Is Broncos country Caleb country then?
Oh, so it's so weird, right? He was the one talking about tanking for Caleb.
Yeah.
What happens if he actually gets him? Now, he had come out since and clarified and made some comments about how it's hard to tank in the NFL and it's not realistic. Yeah. But I don't know. Having him and Caleb Williams together might be interesting. That is, you know.
And it would mitigate the cost of detaching from Russell Wilson's contract. If you take that 1 year hit, right, and you got your starting quarterback on a rookie contract, then you're actually okay.
Here's your 7 degrees from Kevin Bacon moment, because we're talking about a team getting Caleb Williams that we weren't even thinking about at the beginning of the season, and we're going to a team that might get Caleb Williams in the Arizona Cardinals. But, man, Jonathan Gannon was up in two of these games. He was up big against the Giants before they stage one of the biggest comebacks, I think, in NFL history. That was a 20-point swing there in the second half. Huge win, I thought, for Brian Daboll and his guys. We talked about this last week where this Giants team is not supposed to be that good. I mean, they are supposed to be in like year two of a rebuild.
It's them and Minnesota are sort of in the same spot as I see it, you know?
Exactly. But yeah. I thought that this was the perfect example of what they can do. You know, are you going to come back from 20 points down against Green Bay, against Buffalo, against Cincinnati? No. Against Tennessee? No. But you're playing the last, you know, you're playing the worst roster in the league and you're pretty familiar with them. You know, I think that this was one of those nice moments where it solidified the decision they made. It shows that these coaches can still ball. It shows that Daniel Jones can hold down the fort for another year or two, which is all they want him to do. Right. Everyone's talking about this contract. Like, they're going to get out of it in 2 years.
I mean, that's the thing is, like, the way I viewed that contract, and I did a lot of digging into how that all happened. The way I viewed that contract is, here's a guy that the franchise, and I think ownership was involved, and I don't know if Joe Shane and I don't know if those guys would have gone quite as far if they didn't have ownership kind of pushing that along. That said, I do think, like, organizationally, they viewed that as, here's a guy who's done a lot of things right, who we've kind of screwed with the coaching situation, who has worked his way into having a really good year, and you know what? We could do worse than have him as our quarterback for the next 2 years. We could do worse than show the locker room we're rewarding a guy here, especially when they knew they were going to be in the Saquon thing and that the Saquon thing could get a little messy, where they could point back to Daniel Jones and say, hey, look, like, we tried. You know, they paid Andrew Thomas. They paid Dexter Lawrence. They paid Daniel Jones. They're showing the locker room, like, these are the types of guys that we pay. And if Daniel Jones is a bridge to the next guy, like, that's not the worst thing in the world. Like, if he is your Alex Smith, right? If you're Brian Daboll, if he is like what Alex Smith was for Andy Reid in Kansas City, like, I think Daniel Jones, if everything's right around him, can probably do that. Like, he may not be quite as good a player as Alex Smith, but I think he can give you kind of an approximation of that. So, like, I'm with you. I just think, like, it's, you know, the one thing, like, that's always interesting in these situations is, like, does the organization get all hopped up on 1 year of success? Like, the Jets of, like, 2015 would be the most egregious example of this, probably, where, you know, the organizationally, they get way too excited over one thing, 1 year that's sort of a mirage. And I think the Giants and Vikings have done a good job of guarding against that. But yesterday against the Cardinals is a good sign that, like, the program is still where it needs to be.
Exactly.
Even against, like, an inferior opponent.
Yeah, and you're coming off a 40-0 loss to a divisional opponent. Then you drive cross-country, and then you got to stay out in the West Coast for that Thursday night game against the 49ers,
if they lost the Cardinals, then having to go to San Francisco on Thursday night might not have been good. If you were them, what do you think about trading Saquon now?
Yes, I think so. Because you know,
he just got hurt. It's almost like that's your warning sign. I think he's going to be okay, but I feel like that's almost your warning sign now. You know,
I think you have to get what you can. And Dave Gettleman drafted some good players, but you have to get what you can out of the remnants of that group. And you have to be one of the leaders in draft equity over the next 3 or 4 years, because you know Philly will eventually come back to earth. Dallas will eventually come back to earth when they have to pay Micah Parsons. You know, they essentially have to give him part ownership of AT&T to get him to come back and play for them. But
and maybe introduce him to a hologram of Alexander Graham Bell.
Yeah, I mean, I would demand my own hologram if I were. That's part of the deal for me. Has to be. You know, I want to live in perpetuity inside the most gaudy stadium. Gaudy sports stadium in America, but you do have to get what you're going to get. That said, like, you know, I don't want to hear really any complaining from Giants fans. If you thought that this team was a playoff team going into this year, then you weren't paying attention last year. And if you're going to sit here and complain about Daniel Jones and, oh, this isn't working, you know, look at the fact that, you know, we're connecting with Jalin Hyatt. He makes a game-changing play. There's a mid-round pick from this past year's draft. Like, things are working out the way that they're supposed to for you guys, but it's just not on your timetable. Like, last year was a miracle, and then you got the Vikings, the only team luckier than you in the playoffs last year, so you were able to surprise them a little bit.
All you have to do, Connor, is look at, like, the build in Buffalo that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane were a part of.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in 17, Sean McDermott comes in, shakes things up, but, like, keeps a lot of, like, trusted old veterans like Kyle Williams around, right? And they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then they strip it down the next year. They go 6-10. They draft their quarterback. And, like, it took going through a little bit, right? Like, going through some things. I think even the next year, in 2020, they were a little bit, like, scattershot off the start. But by the end of that year, by the end of year three, now they were really rolling with a full complement of draft picks, with a clean cap, with a ton of young talent, and we see what it's become. Like, so there's examples out there for you. In fact, one that, like, connects directly to the Giants. And I think Saquon's an interesting one, because I think Saquon can be, like, I think you can work with him to find, like, an amicable conclusion. And I don't think you're going to get the return that, like, the Niners got for McCaffrey, or that the Panthers got for McCaffrey. But I think that that sort of maybe is the model where it's like, look, dude, we're going to get you to a good place. And you do it that way, and you can have your, like, kind of, like, gold watch moment, as the Giants love those gold watch moments, right? And, like, say, like, thank you for doing everything you've done for the franchise. Now we're going to put you in a position where you can compete for championships right now.
Yeah.
And Buffalo might be that place, by the way.
Ooh, I like that.
I had a take last week, and we can get into the Bills too if you want, but I had a take last week that the Bills should be the team that should be sniffing around Saquon Barkley or Jonathan Taylor. And I think the game against the Raiders validated it.
I think so too. I see Bills as a 2-minute drill team here this week. And we'll save some of that. So there's two games that I like left that I want to dissect a little bit. And the first one is Tennessee in Los Angeles. We saw Brandon Staley, God love him, getting a little bit feisty with a reporter after the game. And Staley in that moment, right, is probably responding the way that all of us would respond. But the reporter in that moment is also asking the questions that we all would have asked, right? Is the Jacksonville thing lingering a little bit for you guys? And I understand from a coaching perspective, a lot of that stuff is narrative driven, and teams are so different year to year that it really doesn't make a difference. But the follow up question, what is the mood in the locker room? And then he said, what do you think the mood in the locker room is? Was a solid exchange. To, you know, everyone's saying that this
I
is
actually
a sign
haven't
of him.
Seen it, so I need to check that out.
But it's the way that so when you hear Brandon Staley talk, like, he's very matter of fact. Yep. And so, you know, it was almost parental, and I'm always going to side with the reporter. It's a tough job, and coaching's a tough job too, but reporter, you're putting yourself out there and you're asking these questions in front of everybody. And I think the reporter's name was Jeff, and Brandon was saying, what do you think the mood is, Jeff? What do you think the mood is after this? Like, and you know, really kind of getting terse. I mean, there's some frustration there. It's obvious. They lose a lot of games. They're on the opposite end of the 2022 Viking spectrum, right? Where every time they get a close game, it seems like there's just one thing that happens that allows the team back in and gives them a little bit of an avenue to a victory. They're going to have to turn this around. There's no excuse at this point. I think the Chargers will turn this around, but I think we learned a lot about the Chargers this week, and I think we learned a lot about the Titans this week too.
I mean, I think the failure of the defense is really in late close situations, the failure of a defense that has spent on the edges with Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, spent a corner with J.C. Jackson, has, you know, a premier, like, again, like, maybe the other player in the NFL outside of Micah Parsons that you would refer to as, like, on defense as a weapon in Derwin James. They have invested a lot in trying to get the defense right. And it just, like, consistently, down the stretch of games, they can't close teams out. And we saw it last week against the Dolphins. And, like, how are you letting Tyreek Hill loose at the end of that game? You know, like, how is Tyreek Hill the one that's beating you at the end of that game? And yesterday, again, I mean, Tannehill, you look at the numbers, it's, I mean, Tannehill, I think, had 120 quarterback rating, and the Titans rushed for 180 yards. It's like, what are you doing well? You know, and that to me is like the question is like, where's their identity going to be defensively? And, you know, I think Brandon Staley is a really sharp coach and, you know, still has a bright future, but like you get in these situations and Kellen Moore too. Like Kellen Moore damn near got David Tepper last February to slam on the brakes and say, I'm going in a different direction. I wanted an experienced head coach, but I'm going to go with Kellen Moore instead. Like, he interviewed that well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people felt like, and it doesn't look like this is going to be the way it is right now, but like a lot of people felt like Dallas would really miss him because some of the things he did creatively. So you have all of that in that building. And I don't know why, but it just feels like for 15 years, that organization has always had trouble harnessing everything that it has. And this goes sort of beyond Staley, but I mean, it just feels like they're perpetually last year's team. And that Titans team isn't great. Like, that Titans team is, they're retooling their offensive line. They're reworking a lot of things up front on that side of the ball. You know, defensively, they're different than they have been. I think it's fair to say with a new general manager and Rand Carthon, they're in a transition year. Now, because Mike Vrabel is the coach, they're going to be competitive week to week, but it's fair to say that they're in a transition year. So for that team to get you in week two, that's a really tough look. And, you know, I just think, you know, the Chargers have a turn coming up in a few weeks where they'll play the Cowboys and the Chiefs back to back. I think that turn makes these next two games against the Vikings and Chargers, again, too early to say must win for anybody, but these two games are really, really important, I think, for the future of a lot of people in that building.
They have to knock the Vikings out completely next week. There's no if and or buts about it. Now, if they go in, if they come out of charge of Cowboys, Chiefs, 2-4, and then you get Bears, Jets after that, I would say, okay, you know, I think you're probably still keeping pace. You know, I'm not in a midseason coaching change kind of panic mode, but man, that is, you know,
well, that's sort of the problem too, is like Kellen Moore sitting there on the staff. And
exactly.
If you're the Spanos family, is there part of you that says, like, we want to give them an audition if you're 1-5?
I know. It's one of the hardest parts about, you know, you go back to Staley making that initial call on Joe Lombardi when he first got the job. And I think there were a lot of OCs who really, really wanted that job, right? And you go back.
You know who he wanted to hire, right?
Who did he want to hire?
Kevin O'Connell.
Ah. So
and McVay blocked him. So Sean had, like, and I know that there was some back and forth there, but that was, but yeah, like, that was, O'Connell had only been with the Rams for a year at that point. He and Staley came in together in 2020, and those two are very close. And I mean, ultimately, you can say, like, oh, that sucks for the Chargers, but I mean, he probably would have lost Kevin O'Connell pretty quickly too, is the other side of it. But, you know, maybe this would have looked a little bit different in that scenario.
Yeah. And with Lombardi, I mean, listen, they threw for 4,700 and then 5,038 yards or whatever it was in 2 years. It was not an unsuccessful deal. But Kellen Moore is probably looked at as someone who has legitimate head coaching potential. Whereas, you know, Lombardi is a fine coach, but I don't think is kind of in that pipeline. And so, yeah, if you're, you know, that is the one difficulty with making the no-brainer coordinator change this offseason was, okay, now I'm really kind of setting myself up for that. Now, I don't know. I thought Staley had enough finesse to survive the end of last season. I think that they're going to get this thing turned around. I really do. But I mean, talk about a team that things could get ugly in a hurry. This is where it's at right now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The last one that I really care about, Green Bay and Atlanta. The Art Smith mustache is just unreal. I think this is one of these. And undefeated. This is a team that has arrived, I think, a lot faster than we thought it were. I thought that this would be sloppier, but they look good. And I mean, Jordan Love had a chance to come back and I believe tie that game with a field goal at the end of the game, or if not kick a game winner. And he couldn't get off the ground. Like, Ryan Nielsen has come in. This defense is fast. It looks good. And it complements the offense to the point where, the Falcons now remind me of like the Titans, like 3 or 4 years ago, where just, I don't want to play them, you know? And I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that, if you look like, go back and look at last year, I think they started 3-1. Is that right? They were doing this last year with like Cordarrelle Patterson as their tailback, where they were a bear to deal with in the running game, and we've seen what Arthur Smith can, how he can affect a running game. And like, I think what you've seen now is a team that's deeper and more talented than last year's team. And like, where last year I think they had a lot of the answers they have this year, and how they wanted to play and their identity and all of that different stuff, they just sort of ran out of players. Like, where over the course of 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, you get to the point where now you thin out your roster, thins out a little bit because of injuries and everything else, and teams start to get a beat on what you're doing, and your roster's just not quite good enough yet. And that was, of course, the year they had all the dead cap money. They come back, they spend this year. They've spent on the defensive front. They've kept their offensive line together. They spent to keep Caleb McGarry. They spent to extend Chris Lindstrom. And like, on defense, you see they're more rugged up front. I just think like, they're that team, and I don't want to call them like Army or Navy or someone like that, but I think because the style is like a little different, the same way Tennessee's style was a little different in how you have to prepare for them and how you have to, like, the different things that you have to be ready for, they're going to be a problem for teams on a week-to-week basis. This is exactly why I picked them to win that division, because I just think it's one of the most well-coached teams in football,
It's one of the most well-conceived teams in football. I think you've got people in that building that are moving the right direction. And I'm going to say this. I think it's the team where this offseason, next offseason, whenever it is, you're going to look at it and say, man, if you just dropped a great quarterback in there. Like, man, if they found a way to get like a game like that. And I think that was sort of the idea with looking at Deshaun Watson a couple of years ago. Their approach to quarterback has been like, let's tread water until we can find a truly great one. I don't think Desmond Ridder is going to be that guy for them, but he's good enough for them to tread water with for right now. If you drop a great quarterback in there over the next year or two, look out. Like, I think that they're just, from a program standpoint, from a roster standpoint, they're getting closer to being that team that's going to be really, really, really attractive for any veteran quarterback that maybe wants out of his current situation, or could be a team that's got its roster at a point where they could throw a bunch of capital at moving up in the draft to go and get one.
It took me forever to Google this, but this, the Bijan and Tyler Allgeier dynamic, reminds me of another historical great running back duo in Atlanta, and I'm wondering if you can guess who it is.
So say that again, sorry.
The dynamic of Tyler Allgeier, yep, and Bijan Robinson reminds me of one of my favorite stylistic compliment running back tandems in the NFL, also with the Atlanta Falcons. Can you think of who I'm talking about?
Jamal Anderson and Warrick Dunn? No.
Not Jamal Anderson and Warrick Dunn, but if you can pull this name, if you can pull this name.
Hold on.
Michigan State, Big Ten guy.
Oh, T.J. Duckett?
Yes. Had 11 Duckett. Touchdowns his second year. Do you remember that? That guy was like a bowling ball.
Oh, and then you had T.J. him Duckett. And oh, Warrick T.J. Dunn. Duckett. Yeah.
Yes.
T.J. Duckett was the guy who he was one of these players from the past who was like, I remember he was like an all-everything linebacker, and he was so insistent on staying in offense. And that was sort of how he wound up at Michigan State, because I think he was from like Grand Rapids or something, and because they were going to let him play running back. And yeah, he wound up being like kind of like this big monster running back who was built like a linebacker. And yeah, so I got my eras mixed up there, because Warrick Dunn would have been with the Bucks when Jamal Anderson was with the Falcons, I think, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And so then
so that would have been like the Michael Vick Falcons, right?
Yeah. Dan Reeves, they went like 9-6-1. So I don't know. I mean, you know, this similar dynamic. But man, I'm actually looking at T.J. Duckett's Wikipedia right now. He had 44 career rushing touchdowns. He played 7 years in the NFL.
How about that?
Not bad. Also,
7 years is a long time for a running back.
7 years is a long time for a 6 foot, 260-pound running back who held from 1999 until 2016 the Class A shot put state record in Michigan. By the way, 67 feet.
Man, and he just looks like the kind of guy you wouldn't want any part of tackling, too.
No. No, he was smaller Derrick Henry.
I was
Derrick
wrong.
Henry.
Kalamazoo. He's from Kalamazoo, not from Grand Rapids. Not far off, but yeah.
I don't have anything else smarter to say about the Falcons than you said, but I just couldn't stop thinking about, my mind started wandering, and all of a sudden I got T.J. Duckett brain. So I'm going to start our clock, Albert. Last week our 2-minute drill was not successful. But I think we're learning to be more concise. Yeah, we're going to roll here, and I'm going to go through some of the games that we didn't yet talk about. So I'm going to start my clock here. San Francisco and Los Angeles. Here's all I'm going to say about this one. I think it showcases the depth of the 49ers personnel and the fact that all things even, this was an even match in terms of brain power, in terms of scheme, in terms of how you set things up. I thought the Rams were really flexible. I thought they were smart, and they're giving themselves a chance to stay in these games and win. But the 49ers are maybe the second most talented team in the NFL, and Christian McCaffrey can just run people over. And
who's
at that
first
point, it doesn't really matter.
You said second very confidently. How do you not have the answer to first?
I mean, I would say it's a toss-up right now between Dallas, and I still think Cincinnati's there.
Okay. Okay. My takeaway from the game is what yours was, which is the depth of San Francisco and the amount of ways that they can come at you is just mind-blowing. You know, and the idea that you've got Ayuk and Debo and George Kittle, and then, you know, you can use Christian McCaffrey as your closer. You know, and the way Brock Purdy keeps checking boxes and what they have on defense, and Nick Bosa's not even really at full go quite yet. You know, like, there's just, barring injury, it's hard to see this team not at least getting to the NFC title game. I'll say that.
They have to. All right. We're already crushing our, time limit here. Indianapolis and Houston, I think a great game for Shane Steichen, but CJ Stroud, 384 yards. The concussion to Anthony Richardson is sort of not a season killer. You know, it's going to put him out. It's also going to put that blueprint on him because, unlike, you know, I remember the Cam Newton rules, right, where they just kind of beat the hell out of him, and we're seeing that sort of take place in Indianapolis. Now it's up to your coach to kind of respond on that, but I did think a nice little breakout game for CJ Stroud, too. You know, they're not going to be a playoff team, but they want him to be able to have weeks like this.
Yeah, and I think, like, the fact that he responded in a spot where I think four of his offensive linemen were down and he got behind early, I think is a good sign for where he's going and what he can be as a quarterback. So you like what you saw there. A shame we didn't get to see more of Richardson. And I would say this for Shane Steichen. They had to change their running game on the fly because when Richardson went out, right? And Zach Moss still went for, what, 120 yards or something?
Yeah.
So, like, it's another reason why I think you can feel really good about Anthony Richardson's development despite what happened yesterday, because the fact that, like, you have an offensive coach who's capable and mentally flexible enough to do these sorts of things, I think is going to give Richardson a great, great, great chance to succeed in the long term.
Chicago and Tampa Bay, I'm going to send you my theory. Tampa Bay has been able to succeed so far without Tom Brady because they're betting on people who have nothing else to lose and who can't lose. Todd Bowles can't have a bad season because he's already a second chance head coach and there is no rebuild. There's only foot on gas. Baker Mayfield is never going to get one of these jobs again. Mike Evans needs that massive third contract, which I think he's working his way towards after. I mean, did you see him just barrel roll great game over a defender the other day? That was phenomenal. And so I think, you know, maybe the Buccaneers are that one team that we overlooked this season because we thought they were old. Yep. They thought they were going to fall apart without Brady, and they still have a way to win.
There's a very real nobody believed in us thing there where I think those guys feel like they were dismissed by a lot of people when Brady walked out the door. And I think that's given them something to prove. And there's a lot of proud veterans in that locker room with rings, with a lot of skins on the wall that have something to prove now. And I think Baker sort of ignites all of that with his hair across his ass, walk on, like, no one believes in me type of attitude. So I think, you know, in a lot of ways you've had a lot of things kind of come together. Like, the perfect quarterback for that team walked into that door. They didn't need to pay much to get him. And, you know, now I think they're set up to be competitive week to week. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be a Super Bowl team again, but it wouldn't surprise me if the NFC South comes down to them and the Falcons.
Seattle and Detroit, the ski mask thing kind of came back to bite the lines there. This was always going to be a big letdown game for them, especially after going on the road, beating the Chiefs in Kansas City, and then you're coming home hosting the Seahawks, who came off that disappointing loss to the Rams last week. I don't have much to say other than both of these teams are still really good, right? And they played each other, and they played a great football team. You know, they played a great football game.
I wouldn't be surprised if they see each other in the playoffs. I think Geno, nice moment for Geno in that he took that really horrible sack at the end of regulation. And, you know, it could have felt like everything was crashing down on him again, and it could be a here we go again moment for him. And I think he lost 17 yards in that play. It set up the field goal that the Lions kicked to force overtime. And he came back and he led the Seahawks right down the field in overtime. Good throw to Tyler Lockett for the touchdown. A couple good throws, you know, along the way there. One to Parkinson, the other one to DK. And I think a nice finish to the afternoon for Geno, where I think they're set up to get themselves rolling a little bit here.
Yeah. So the last one that I think merits us having a real conversation about, Buffalo, Las Vegas. Let's just get that one. Let's just kick that one down the road. I mean, you know, the Bills are good.
Can I just say this? Like, last week I felt like the dumbest take of the offseason got debunked in the Rams are tanking for Caleb Williams. Always a stupid idea. Always a stupid storyline. Well, this debunked the dumbest storyline of week one, which was that the Bills are dead and that Josh Allen has somehow gotten in a time machine and gone back to 2019.
I think we were quick to point out, like, the Dable thing, that was all over the broadcast. And yeah. I think that was what surprised me, was that, you know, a lot of people latched on to, oh, Dable's gone, he's not that good. I mean, you know, there are bad games from a week-to-week perspective. He showed that he was still excellent. The Raiders have a lot of work to do. I mean, this, you know, I think big changes could be coming there if they're not able to, you know, start pulling out some of these ones. But they were just in a different class, and the Bills said to the AFC East, what's up, everybody?
Yep, and I think it was another check mark for them that that game started about as poorly as it possibly could have for them,
mm-hmm.
where it was 5 plays, 75 yards, touchdown for the Raiders, then a 3-and-out by the Bills offense. And it would have been really easy on a short week with everything that happened on Monday night for that to get in their heads. And instead, the Bills just jammed on the gas and put the Raiders out of their misery really, really quickly.
Our final one, Cincinnati and Baltimore. We're at like 6 minutes, by the way. We're like a 2022 Broncos field goal unit. Like, mm-hmm. we're late. We're not here. All I'll say is this. I wrote about whether or not I want to freak out about Joe Burrow. I watched the way that he's throwing the ball right now. I watched last year. It's different. He doesn't have that same kind of torque on it. He's not able to put that oomph into it. And I do think that changes a lot of stuff, and it puts a lot more pressure on this defense, makes them need to score, you know, hold some elite talents to not a lot and basically play small ball for a little bit while Joe Burrow gets healthy. I don't know how healthy you can get an injury like that over the course of the season. And that's the only reason I'm worried, because he is Peyton Manning level, where if he is hurt, the entire thing gets ripped apart.
Yeah, and I think, like, what we're in for now is a month of sideline shots of Joe Burrow sitting on the bench
with that Theragun.
Well, there was the Theragun, but, like, last week, I don't know if you saw this, but last week in the opener in Cleveland, there were shots of him, like, kind of doing this weird thing with his knee where he had his, like, fingers over the top of his kneecap, like he was, like, working something. And they legitimately did like 90 seconds of analysis on what that is. So I think because of this slow start, we are all going to be privileged to get lots of Joe Burrow sideline shots with a very good view of whatever he's doing to the leg that he injured back in late July, was it? Late July, right?
Send that Theragun over here, by the way, Joe Burrow.
I could use the Theragun in a lot of different spots.
I know. I'm 35, man, and it sucks. And I can't imagine being any age and having like a lingering calf injury. But I'm not smashing the panic button yet. And I know every Bengals fan out there, including me, new Bengals fan Connor Orr, is going to say, hey, we went 0-2 last year, and then we ended up winning a bunch of games, and so relax. I think it's a little bit different because the quarterback is a little bit different right now. And so I think there's no shame in worrying a little bit, because this is something that's out of their control. It's still a very good team. It's just, hey, the guy got banged up a little bit, you know?
And hey, I think we all can get a little excited on what we've started to see from Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they're doing some things in the passing game that are a little bit different, and they've got a lot of exciting weapons. And my concern coming out of week one with Baltimore was the running game doesn't quite look the same. And losing Greg Roman, is there going to be like a consequence to that? And they came back this week and rushed for like 170 yards. And like, we're able to finish the game, which, you know, you always hear coaches say that. Like, the ultimate measure of your toughness as a football team is if you can run the ball when the other team knows you're going to run it, right? Well, the way they closed that game out, which has nothing to do with Joe Burrow, right? The way they closed that game out, they lined up and they ran it at the Cincinnati defense. six straight plays, two first downs, and then they're in kneel downs. And I think it was sort of like this statement from the Ravens, like, don't forget about us. Like, we're still who we have been. And the idea that I think they're going to add that the running game could be the same as it's been the last few years with Greg Roman calling it, with more in the passing game, should get the attention of a lot of people in the AFC.
Albert, what is your Monday night football plan? Are you making a big
dinner? I have two screens. Huh? Ooh. Oh, well, you mean like food-wise?
Yeah.
So we have like we're a HelloFresh family. So we have one HelloFresh. And this is always like the end of the week. It was actually like this podcast where I did reads for HelloFresh and they got me, they hooked me in. If they want to advertise with us again, that's cool. But they hooked us in because they sent us a few boxes and we're like, wow, this is really good. And that was 7 years ago. And we're still every week, three boxes a week. And so Monday is like the night where the previous week's boxes have run out, you know? And so like if you want to get that last one, that last meal kit cooked, you got to do it this week. I think we have quesadillas. How about you?
I've been, we don't have a stove right now. We only have a microwave. Oh, right. And so,
does that mean just constant takeout?
You know what it's been the Whole Foods hot bar.
Okay.
And so like you try to get
two
meals out of that.
Is there a Whole Foods close to you?
Yeah. And so you try to get two meals out of that. And like you can basically get like 5 pounds of turkey, like cubed turkey for like $14. And so
like the kind that goes on a salad, you mean?
Yeah. And so then that way you can kind of make it work. So I think I'm going to do that. No really mind blowing matchups here. I mean, I'm kind of waiting to see what the Browns do, but we'll break that down next week. Be aware too, guys, and let us know what you think. Gilberto and Matt doing a great job in that Thursday spot. Please leave them a rating and review. Let us know what you think there. Albert, thanks always for coming around, and we'll see everybody next Sunday.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, I love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.